Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937, Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Well, let's see. Santa's got a full head of hair. Ben Bernanke is probably thinner, but they've both got beards. And one other thing in common, too. They both come bearing gifts. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Great to have you with us on this Christmas Day 2008. And the Federal Reserve had one last gift for the auto industry this holiday season. Old St. Bernanke crammed it down Detroit's chimney before the kids had even gone to bed last night. He's going to let GMAC, that's General Motors Finance Company, turn itself into a bank holding company. GMAC thus joins other recent converts, including the likes of American Express and CIT Group. Why, you ask? Well, it's because bank holding companies get something that auto financing firms and credit card companies and commercial lenders generally don't. That would be a chance to get their hands on billions of dollars from the TARP, the Treasury's original bailout fund. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports.
A car is the most expensive thing Americans buy after a house. Most people don't pay in cash. They need loans from financing companies like GMAC. And says Michelle Krebs, editor of EdmondsAutoObserver.com.
It's also a tool for the auto companies to, you know, special lease deals or special loan rates, and those are made possible through companies like GMAC. So those are also ways to lure people into the showroom.
So they can buy cars from GM, which itself just got a loan worth more than $9 billion from Uncle Sam.
Funds have totally dried up for everyone. So the only source of funds, it seems, these days is through the government.
Tony Simonetti is a vice president of global communications for GMAC. She says changing to a bank holding company will help GMAC in the long term, not just right now.
The online bank is a way for us to generate deposits, a very stable base of funding. So you'll see us operating more like a bank and less like an industrial company.
As a result of the status change, GM and the private equity firm Cerberus will have to drastically reduce their stakes in GMAC to meet federal requirements. Simonetti says while the Fed's move does provide immediate relief, GMAC still faces a number of challenges, including a major restructuring of company debt that's supposed to conclude tomorrow. I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Despite this being a day run wild with consumerism in many homes across the country, retailers are suffering a massive holiday hangover this year. They're still stuck with huge piles of unsold inventory, and that has stores paying the price for the worst holiday sales figures they've posted in decades. From Washington, Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer reports.
Retailers have to buy their inventory 6 to 12 months ahead of time. It really is Christmas in July. Sarah Johnson is a retail analyst with IHS Global Insight. She says stores didn't overorder.
Retailers had been fairly cautious in planning for the holiday season, but sales just fell off a cliff.
A mountain of unsold clothing, jewelry, and electronics was left behind. Computers, cameras, cell phones, and flat panel TVs had less appeal than usual for the gadget obsessed. And it wasn't just the price. Marshall Cohen follows retail for the NPD Market Research Group.
This year, much of what's going on in electronics are repeats of last year. So if I got you a digital camera last year, odds are I'm not going to get you another one this year.
Stores chipping away at mountains of merchandise are getting creative. Take JCPenney. It's pinning its hopes on teenagers armed with Christmas cash and gift cards. It's even offering 5:30 a.m. wake-up calls tomorrow morning. Now, I don't know about you, but if the teens in my life got a call at 5:30, they'd boycott the store. But Cohen thinks it might work, and not just for teens.
The teenager is bringing, in many cases, another member of the family, what I call the wallet, mom or dad.
Of course, it'll take a crowbar to open that wallet. Retail analyst Patrick McKeever of MKM Partners says stores are settling in for a long, hard winter.
It'll take at least a quarter or so before the supply meets the demand.
And this Christmas in July could be ugly. McKeever says retailers will slash their orders for 2009 holiday merchandise. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
No wake-up call for traders today. The markets were closed, but that doesn't mean there's not going to be any music. We'll have the details when we do the number. This is, for the most part, a season of celebrations, friends and family, and shared memories. On Wall Street, though, the memories are nothing short of lousy. Billions in losses, tens of thousands of layoffs. And as the weekly and monthly unemployment reports relentlessly tell us, the pink slips keep on coming. Marketplace's Amy Scott has been keeping an eye on how the financial crisis is changing the culture of Wall Street. And a couple of weeks ago, she spent some time with the recently unemployed at a holiday celebration of sorts.
I found Chris Lewis by the bar, clutching a folder full of papers. Turned out it was his severance package. Lewis had been let go from his job at Credit Suisse just hours before. He was on his way home when he remembered an invitation he'd received to a Wall Street pink slip party at a bar in Lower Manhattan. Come jingle and mingle, it said, with folks who want to help you get a new position in 09.
I was just walking to the subway. Then immediately struck me, no, Chris, don't go home. Okay, go and meet some people. There might be a lot of people who are in the same boat as you are.
He was right. Hundreds of men and women milled about, sipping drinks and exchanging business cards. The event was part of a series of parties aimed at matching out-of-work Wall Streeters with potential jobs. Pink glow-in-the-dark bracelets separated the job seekers from the recruiters who wore green. Dilip Pitty Kitty fell into the pink category. He lost his job as a research associate at a small broker-dealer a few months ago. He says he's been getting by on some part-time work.
Like dog walking on the Upper West Side and the government money, the unemployment benefits kind of, and also for my parents too. They pay for my month's rent.
24-year-old Munira Ahmed has been living with her parents. She graduated from college last spring, only to face the worst job market in decades.
It is a very hard slap in the face because college was not a breeze, you know? So all the work that was supposed to pay off at the end, it's just not.
At the other end of the career spectrum, Richard Rabbit Ryan was more philosophical. He's worked in one finance job or another since the early 80s, so he's seen cycles.
I enjoyed my job. I went to work every day. I gave 110%. And when my parent company decided they had to lay off tens of thousands of people, I was one of them cut. What can I do about it?
Maybe not much for a while. Ryan says nobody hires in December. He plans to enjoy the holidays and start fresh in the new year. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Setting up holiday decorations is fun and all part of the celebration of the season. I know this sounds Grinch-like, though, but even for the most festive among us, it can be a drag time-wise, hauling the lights and trinkets out of the attic, not to mention getting them set just so. So if you're too strung out to string up your Christmas lights, call a professional and order up some instant holiday cheer. It doesn't come cheap, and yeah, it's not really in the spirit, but there is something to be said for convenience. Lenora Chu has more.
Bob Pranga first started decorating homes for the holidays as a survival job between acting gigs. But business quickly took off, and these days he goes by the name Dr. Christmas.
Anybody who's requiring Christmas from A to Z, that's what I do.
Pranga and his team do it all, from stringing your rooftop lights to trimming your tree Art Deco style. Burn out a bulb between Thanksgiving and New Year's? A technician will pop in and fix it. Pranga likes to say he gives people their time back.
Everybody thinks that, you know, L.A. is a big, you know, lazy playground for the rich, and it's really not, because the majority of people here, it's a factory town. I mean, these people are working all the time.
Pranga says he's even saved a few new marriages in the process.
It's that first year of kind of letting go of your control issues and kind of making this a two-party deal rather than a one-party deal. I have to remind people that Christmas is, you know, supposed to be an enjoyable time of the year.
Decorating services aren't cheap. Many lights on your roofline with window trimmings and a wreath on your door will cost at least $1,500. Toss in green LED lighting and indoor styling for a mansion, and you could be paying the bill till tax season, says Deloitte Services retail expert Jackie Fernandez.
The amount someone can spend can go up to probably $20,000, $25,000, depending on how much you're going to do, how big your house is, how extravagant, do you want in and out, all of that.
Even so, more people across the country are hiring holiday help, especially in urban areas. But in L.A., it's more about status than it is in Ann Arbor, says Pranga.
Because in the Midwest, if you find a bargain, it's a good day. In L.A., if you don't pay a lot for it, it's not worth anything. But the overall message is still for everybody, yes.
More dual-income families means more time at work and less time for the details. Retail expert Fernandez.
These services are going to keep growing because of the demand, which will drive prices down, and that, I believe this will therefore push it in more into the mainstream than keeping it as a luxury item.
Fernandez herself is spending $500 to decorate her roofline with icicle lights. That keeps her husband off a ladder and safely inside. In Los Angeles, I'm Lenora Chu for Marketplace.
Coming up, home for the holidays means different things to different people.
In the small towns, it's a party when everyone's visiting. There's not really any jealousy. It's more like they're coming back to share their success with us.
But first, let's do the numbers. This year, the cost of a partridge in a pear tree has jumped about a third, according to the annual index drawn up by PNC Wealth Management there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The festive fowl will set your true love back $20, the pear tree another $200. If you look at the full package, lords a-leaping, calling birds, turtle doves, and all, it comes to $21,080.10. It's a modest increase of just above 1% on last year. Seems the major inflationary element in the package was the seven swans of swimming, up a third on last year. Skip the swans, the tab drops to a modest $15,480.10. Yes, a bit less romantic, but so much in keeping with the times, don't you think? You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Clarkson Potter, publishers of The Splendid Tables, How to Eat Supper, a holiday gift idea for people who love to eat. Now available at splendidtable.org. Want more from Marketplace's special Fallout coverage? It's all on our website. You'll find special podcasts, videos, and the Marketplace Decoder, a simple guide to financial terms and products. Go to marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Friday. The 7-day African American festival Kwanzaa begins. Boxing Day, a public holiday, is observed in the United Kingdom and other countries. And after Christmas sales begin. Yes, some of those massive retail holiday bargains we keep hearing about might get even better for shoppers. I'm Michelle Phillippe. Merry Christmas.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Over the holidays, a lot of us are probably going to hunker down with our families, do some quality hanging out, play some board games, maybe watch a DVD. Sad to say, though, that would be so last year of you. This Christmas, power chords in the new bonding mechanism. The video music game Rock Band 2 is one of the hot gifts this year. So we're going to reprise a segment I did last year about this time with our gadget guy, Kevin Pereira from G4 Television, and the original version of the game Rock Band. A quick disclaimer before we roll this tape, I really actually can sing better than this. We are not alone for the first time in our series with you. We have, first of all, the game of the day, the gizmo of the day.
Game of the year.
Game of the year.
Is
Rock Band. Rock Band.
It's by EA and the company Harmonix that actually created Guitar Hero, which hopefully everybody understands.
Which you and I have done.
We've played there, but this is the next iteration, and we had to fill out some other members here.
Because this is actually a band game.
It's an entire band.
We're going to have me on vocals. You're going to do what, bass?
I'll play bass or guitar, either way.
All right. We've got two of our producers here. Stephen Hoffman is
is on either bass or guitar, one of those things, and Jennifer Collins will be on drums.
Yes. Again, for $160, the Rock Band kit, which you have to lug home like a roadie, comes with a guitar, the microphone, and an entire drum kit. So it's, you know, four pads and a bass drum pedal.
All right, so let's do it. Let's see what we got here.
All right, but now the interesting thing about what you're going to hear is what goes through a typical Rock Band session, which is first song selection.
All right, so we have here in the studio a monitor, which we're all staring at trying to figure out our thing, and it's going to be a lot like it was when we did Guitar Hero. That is to say, it's the lyrics are going to bounce along on the screen, and you're going to have certain buttons you have to hit on your guitar based on what's happening on the screen.
Correct. We're all going to share. The drums will see their notes coming along the bottom in the middle. Guitars on the side. Your notes will be up top.
So set us up with something that we're all going to sort of know.
Well, this is the half the fun here. It's arguing about what song we want to play. So, I mean, Kai, you're singing. I mean, that's
singing, so you
important.
Pick it.
I mean, we could go with some Killers.
See. Keep on flipping.
Bon Jovi, Wanted Dead or Alive. How do you not?
How do you not
pick Dead or Alive?
All right, I guess we have to do that.
All right. So we'll hop in.
So here we are.
Important to note, by the way, the new guitar, or the Rock Band controllers, rather, have buttons to shred towards the top of the neck for your awesome face-melting solos. And it has an effects switcher, so you can actually add echo,
the
reverb,
graphics
chorus,
are actually better.
And the graphics look amazing.
Yeah, the graphics are really good.
And you can customize your rocker. We can actually choose a name, individual names, make it all.
Yeah, because we need that. The same. Wow, I can do this. Only the names will change. Ah, every day it seems we're back. Always the place where the faces are so cold. I'm doing this on the radio. I drive all night just to get back home. I'm a cowboy on a steel horse ride. Wanted.
You got it. Take it, Kai. Take it.
Dead or alive. What does that mean?
Well, we completed the song 28%.
So here I'm going to spend $150 for this thing that tells me basically that I suck.
But see, I have parents that'll do that for free. But the great thing about this is
I have kids.
Yeah,
so we're
you only made it 28%, but you can hit a button, restart it.
Man, oh man! Now you played this with the folks at Thanksgiving.
I from the trip to the airport to my folks' house, picked up a 360, picked up Rock Band, brought it there, and that's where it shall live now because they are hooked, and. It's great. You know, even as a kid, I never got to play games with my parents. They didn't understand them. They didn't like it. They weren't any good at it. But this, my mom knows how to butcher Creep by Radiohead. So now she, you know, she can do that just fine. My dad's, you know, a terrible, you know, Black Sabbath drummer, but he picked it up and we plugged through it. And you know what? We had a blast. Four straight days of Rock Band bliss.
And we go out now with the crowd booing us off the stage. Stephen Hoffman and Jennifer Collins helped us out today in the studio. Kevin Pereira, G4 Television, attack of the show. And I actually made a fool of myself on my own radio program. Here we go. Kevin, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
If you just can't live without hearing me sing some more, and that thing gets worse every time I hear it, or if you want to see pictures to prove it actually happened, and sadly it did, go to our website, marketplace.org. Music is one of the signatures of this season, but celebrations of all kind need soundtracks, too. And today we'll meet a woman who's often at the center of the festivities, also in close proximity to a dance floor.
What's up, y'all? I have a good time. Hell yeah! My name is Claudette Sexy DJ. And you better scream!
Hello, everybody. My name is Claudette, Sexy DJ Colbert. I started DJing in 1975. My mother used to say, you need a real job. That's nice, you can play records, but then after I became more popular and well-known and traveled and started traveling a lot, he said, well, this is nice. I'm really glad that you know how to play records and pay your rent. I joined the Job Corps to get out of Compton. They sent me to a little town called Astoria, Oregon. We would go AWOL and hitchhike to Portland and hang out outside of this club called the Rafters, the Embers Rafters. One day I snuck in. There was a man in there making all this music come out and making people dance. And I asked him, how is he doing that? You know, you have one record on one turntable, one on the other turntable, and the beat never changed, but the song changed. And he told me it was mixing, and he showed me some things, and then other DJ guys would show me things. I would definitely say it's a lot tougher than just putting on a record, taking off a record. I was in a club last night, and there was a DJ just playing beats, instrumental beats, and then cutting and scratching and mixing the beat back in and dropping an a cappella into it. So you have a beat going like this, and then you have someone singing on top of that, and it's not the original record. It's what he has created. Somebody said it was like a bruja, which is a witch, mixing a big pot, and you're just stirring that magic, and people are just caught under your spell, and you have them in the palm of your hand, and they all leave feeling so wonderful. I like to sing when I DJ, but, you know, I never thought anybody paid attention. They just see me singing, and somebody gave me a mic one night while I was DJing, and I was DJing and singing and laughing, and people just were so uplifted by that whole thing about a singing DJ. Because some DJs, they don't want you to talk to them. They don't want you to request anything. They want you to just dance and leave them alone so they can do their creative thing. An afternoon event would be maybe 4 or 5 hours. An evening event would be maybe 4 or 5, maybe 6 hours. And my salary with that can range from between $25,000 and $30,000 a year. People still like to see the records. A little tiny girl said, that's the biggest CD I've ever seen. I said, it's called an LP. Ask your father. I gotta go mix. No, I'm sorry, I don't have the Barney remix.
We've got a whole archive of Days in Other Work Lives on our website. It's marketplace.org. Hopefully everybody who's going home for the holidays has gotten there by now. That probably meant hours of waiting around airports or stuck in traffic jams. But for a lot of young Mexicans raised here, home has sort of a different meaning. They join their families and drive south to the villages in Mexico that their parents or their grandparents are from. When they get there, the older generations are busy seeing relatives, and the younger folks are left to drive some more, as Melissa Giroux reports.
A night of cruising starts with the right soundtrack. This cruising duo has passed up the hip-hop CDs in their pile for a ranchera style currently popular in the American Midwest. They fast forward for the perfect arrival song.
Next.
They pick a tune and then sit back in the van. It's got blinds, flashing lights, and a driver's seat in permanent recline. The vehicle and the music signal that, after a 36-hour drive from Chicago, they've arrived with dollars in their pockets and the determination to spend them partying. During the holidays, small towns like La Jolla Durango are clogged with trucks and SUVs every afternoon and night. The license plates read Illinois, Colorado, Texas, California. Many trucks are new and most gleam. Cruisers wash their cars daily before making the slow, deliberate drive through narrow, dusty streets. They smile at the holiday traffic cops and salute them with open cans of beer. Meanwhile, the locals are a little less joyous as they serve visitors from the States in the town's shops and restaurants. Are these cruisers here to share their bounty or to flaunt it? Before the cruising hour, drivers check out each other's souped-up vehicles.
Look at these huge rims.
Huge navigator.
I don't really see
this in Chicago.
Yeah, right?
No, in Chicago you see the regular navigators, but not fixed up like this.
Well, you do, but considering the small population, there's a lot of it here.
19-year-old Lisandra Nevarez and 23-year-old Tony Orozco are among a large contingent from Chicago who drove down to spend the holidays here. Tony grew up in La Jolla, and he remembers when the roads were not jammed.
All the cars, the new cars that you see, it's been a change in the last 10 years. Before, everyone was poor. We didn't have much. Yeah, you walked.
So how did you get to the next town?
There's a bus. We call it La Burra. the donkey. My mom used to go there all the time in the bus.
It turns out the few trucks people in this town owned a decade ago were work vehicles used to haul crops, fertilizer, and farming equipment. Cruising changed that. It started out as a homecoming ritual when people who'd left for the States were able to save enough to buy trucks there and drive home for a visit and a victory lap. So how do the Mexicans left behind in poor rural villages feel about the holiday visitors raising dust in their American pickups and SUVs? Here's Durango native and historian Javier Guerrero.
Tú vas a los pueblos y es una fiesta ahorita porque está la gente.
In the small towns, it's a party when everyone's visiting. There's not really any jealousy. It's more like they're coming back to share their success with us.
But are they sharing? Actually, the Pew Center for Hispanic Research says they do for the first 5 years. 5 years later, they're a bit less generous. In fact, the longer these immigrants stay in the U.S., the less likely they are to send money. And their children are even less likely. In Mexico, the locals understand this. Tony Orozco says that the second and third generation raised north of the border have a different relationship with the locals and are likely to be show-offs or presumidos.
Presumido is basically a show-off. Someone who comes back and is showing everyone how much money they have with the nice clothes and the glasses. They're driving around with the cars. They feel they're better than you.
However they feel about the locals, second and third generation Mexican Americans cruising these streets mostly come to vacation and to party cheaply. And while the townsfolk appreciate those dollars, they feel the distance between themselves and the young cruisers growing long before they watch them drive away. From Durango, Mexico, I'm Melissa Giroux for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing a wide range of tax-exempt portfolios. Details at putnam.com. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
This final note today, as we begin to look back on the year gone by, Business Week has pulled together some of the more, well, I guess you could say, optimistic economic and financial predictions that were made this year. The whole list is online, but here are a couple of the highlights. Barney Frank, the chairman of the House Financial Services Committee, saying in July that he didn't see any danger of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac going under. Oil man T. Boone Pickens, who, it should be said, has lost a whole lot of money this year, predicting oil at $150 a barrel by the end of the year. Crude closed at $35.35 yesterday. And the president of the United States, who said in March, and I quote, "The market is in the process of correcting itself." Still is, actually. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media on this Christmas Day. The markets will close today for the holiday. Stephen Gregory, John Haas, Patty Hirsch, Betsy Streisand, and Lisa Tucker are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor is George Judson. Coming up next time on the program, British theatergoers will notice that the economy is center stage.
Debt, loan, income, vehicle, mortgage, debenture, fund. Debt, loan, income, vehicle, mortgage, debenture, fund.
I get it.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow. Told you I could sing better than that.
American Public Media.